I come out here not very often, and my memory's not very good, so today when we pulled off Route 7 and down this highway and then into the shopping center here, I said something to Diane about, I never remember how to get through this area here and find the Camp Hampton Inn, because you can't actually see the inn when you come
it's
over there.
True. It's hard.
And I said, I'd never know. And then I looked up, and I saw a store, and it said, Sports Authority. And I thought, oh, that's got to be right on the way to my talk.
Absolutely.
And it was. Yeah, Connie asked me to talk about lesson 6 in this book. And this, again, is another area where I had no idea how you normally do things. So I was thinking to myself, will everybody have read this before I come? And will they even have this book with them, or so it'll be in front of them or something? And I see nobody's got it. And has anybody read it?
Nope. Years ago.
Years ago, oh. Okay. So I may have to draw a picture up here, just since some of you may not see that too well.
There's a symbol behind you, and there's one in front of you.
Oh, okay, yes, but this is a little different than that one.
Okay.
So, in fact, that's one of the things I want to talk about, just mention.
Do we have a marker?
Yeah.
I've got markers. I've got them out there. When I started, I thought, how am I... Well, when Connie first asked me to talk about this chapter, and she just gave me the title, the sense of authority, I thought to myself, oh, I'm a retired Army officer. I ought to have plenty to say about authority. Then a few days later, I read Lesson 6, and I thought, well, that's a little different. But I am going to start talking about some of the differences. First of all, let me just give you a dictionary definition. I think this was from Webster, but I got it off the internet. The definition for authority. A noun. Plural is authorities. Number one, the power to determine, adjudicate, or otherwise settle issues or disputes. Jurisdiction. The right to control, command, or determine. And a power... And number two is the power or right delegated or given authorization. To me, the little part about the right to control, command, or determine is something I'll come back to, because in a way, that's what we're doing spiritually with our lives. So I kind of like that. Just to talk for a minute about military authority, since I spent 20 years in the military. But I've been out of the Army now for over 35 years, so I had to Google military authority just to see what was out there. Well, I found all kinds of stuff, and it was all stuff that I had been strongly grounded in as an Army officer, and it all sort of came back. But basically in the military, authority is directly tied to what they call the chain of command. And it starts at the top, and is passed down through that huge tree of structure. And at every level, well, it starts with the Constitution, which gives authority to Congress and the President as the head of the executive branch to defend the country. And then it all flows from there. The President is the commander-in-chief of all the military forces. And he has underneath him the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and every member of that is the chief of staff of one of the military services. And then there's a whole command structure below that.
And
it's very elaborate, and it's grilled into you when you go into the military or how that works. So the authority just gets passed all the way down, broken into pieces. But one of the things that's sort of key in the military is authority is tied to mission, because mission is passed down as well. And at every level, somebody is given a mission. And it's their job, assisted by their staff and so on, to break that mission into smaller parts that they can assign to subordinate units. And then they pass that mission down by giving orders to the subordinate units, with passing a mission to each of them. So that if the subordinate units all get their mission accomplished, the mission of the higher level commander will be done, will be completed. And that works all the way down the line. And when authority is passed down, it's really the authority to do whatever it takes to accomplish that mission. You don't have authority as a battalion commander to do something that applies to the mission of some other unit or that applies to the local police department or anything like that. Your authority is all related to the mission that's given to your unit and to you as the commander of it. So we may come back to that relationship between authority and mission. As I was reading a lot about this and getting it all back into my head, I was also thinking, well, but that's not what we're talking about here. And I thought, well, I Googled spiritual authority. And I was somewhat surprised. Almost everything I found was related to religions and religious organizations and how they handle authority. Basically, the authority to interpret the word of God or the word that their founding documents, you know, and that kind of thing. And in most of the cases where it talked about spiritual authority, it also included a hierarchy. Like in the Catholic Church, for example, it all starts with the Bible, which is like the Constitution. But or actually, Jesus is back up there someplace first. But the Bible is about his life. And then you've got the Pope, who is sort of like the commander-in-chief. And he passes it down. And he's got a whole structure of archbishops and bishops and, you know, underneath them. That, to tell you the truth, isn't that different than what the military does? And most of the things I found on spiritual authority were related to some kind of an organizational structure for a religion, a religious organization. And it also, most of them had that same thing. So I got to that point and I thought, what we're talking about in this chapter is still very different. And to me, one of the main differences is, in science of mind, first of all, we don't call ourselves a religion. We tend to say we are a philosophy, a faith, and a way of life, or something like that, and we call it a teaching. Science of mind is a teaching. And many times we try to avoid calling ourselves religious or organizations, or we're not a religion. And maybe that's one of the key reasons, because we don't have a command structure like that. It's one and what I call many, because oneness wouldn't mean anything without the many of us. But that's it. There's an administrative command structure, just again in the organization with CSL and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's not really related to the... That's more administrative, and it's not really related to the teaching and the interpretation of the teaching. That's, again, a one-in-many thing. And it's up to each of us to come to our own beliefs about this and to read the teachings. But I've always felt I'm free to go read the teachings from any religion, because that's what Ernest Holmes did. So it's a very different kind of a thing. So then you ask yourself, all right, now in the context here, what are we talking about for authority? And when you start looking at lesson 6, one of the first things it comes to is it starts talking about the threefold nature of being, which I think that's terminology that actually comes from Troward, but he was somebody that Ernst Holmes studied also. And the diagrams they have in this book, in fact, at the beginning of lesson 6, they go back through this triune nature of God, or this three-way way of viewing being. And chapter 4, or lesson 4 of the book, has details. You know, in fact, I think Jim talked about lesson 4 a while back. I've listened to the talks, but I get them mixed up as to which was which. And lesson five also was largely about this triune nature of being. Lesson six starts off with the same thing. Just that nature of being in lesson six, the diagrams they have here again, which are mostly from Troward, talk about spirit, mind, and body. And their diagram is a little different than this one. Ernest Holmes took a circle and divided it with parallel lines, and then, of course, put that big V in it. These simply divide it this way. But the triune part of it is pretty much the same. Because Ernest Holmes called this spirit, law, and form, but he's really talking about the same thing that Troward is talking about when he talks about spirit, mind, and body. And instead of this V in these little diagrams, I'll come back to talk about this, there's little arrows from mind into what they, spirit into what they call mind, and then there's another little arrow here. Those are significant. And those, to me, sort of constitute that V there. So we've got some different semantics. Spirit, mind, body. Some people call it spirit, soul, body. Ernest Holmes calls it spirit, law, and form. But when you look at the details of what's printed in these, Troward was talking pretty much the same kind of stuff that Ernest Holmes talks about and has in his diagrams at the back of the Science of Mind manual. So they're really the same concept. Now, in terms of this leading into the discussion of authority, they again start with a review of this. And one of the key things they point out when you see these diagrams, there's two diagrams. Now, the diagrams are almost identical, even with basically the same words in it. The only thing they do is they put different highlighting in them. And so when I looked at this, I thought, okay, well, this is the big picture. But then again, when I looked at the next one, I thought, well, that's the little picture. Because it's the first one is titled The Creative Process in the Universe. And the next one is The Creative Process in the Individual. And that's sort of fundamental in our teaching. They're the same creative process. So that's the real message here. That in becoming a person in science of mind, you've got to get that idea that the way the world works for an individual is the way the world works for the whole universe. And we're all part of it. So that's one of the big lessons here. And when you get that, that's sort of part of the root of authority then when you do things, because you've got the authority of the universe behind you. Not delegated down through some huge command structure that's miles long, but directly from the one to the many, to you. One step. I have to keep looking at my notes, because if I don't stay on track, I could end up talking a full hour. So this threefold nature of God, or of being, now that's another just interesting point. This talks about creative process in the universe, and Troward was using the term universe the way we think of God, or the oneness. Because in Ernest Holmes' diagram, when he drew it with the V in there, he really called the circle God. Because God is all there is. Everything was in there. Troward does the same thing. But this circle, he calls it the universe, but that's what we mean often when we say God. It's the total entirety of everything. So those two things sort of go together. One of the places where people who are new in science of mind sort of get some misinterpretations at times is when they hear people that have been in science of mind a long time use a lot of the jargon that we use. They keep hearing this expression, we are one in spirit. And especially newcomers tend to think, well, they mean the same thing, but spirit and God. And when you really go into this, that's a key thing that's not correct. In these diagrams, at least, spirit is one part of it. Spirit is part of the triune nature of God or of being. And then you also still have mind and body. So we are one. What we keep saying one in spirit, but what most of us mean is one in God. Or we just talk about we are part of the oneness. But it's not just spirit. We are one in mind and law with the whole universe. We operate all under the same law. And we're one there. And our bodies are part of the physical form of the universe. So we're all one at that level too. So I keep thinking of it, that that's one thing we need to get in our heads. We're not just one in spirit. We are one in God, and that includes spirit, mind, and body. And the things we do for our body or against our body can affect the entire universe physically. It just, there's a science about this, the wave effect of anything we do physically being able to affect another planet halfway across the universe. Of course, the effect is a little tiny by the time it gets there. Now, one of the things that I got, there's a lot of detail in these circles, and I'm not going to go into that at length, but it describes basically the process for doing things. And as I pointed out, it's got these little arrows that are sort of like the V here. And I want to talk about that for a minute, because one of the things I did not find in Lesson 6, which, although it's probably in this book somewhere, is how, in Science of Mind, we have three fundamental spiritual practices or tools. What are they? Pardon?
Treatment.
Meditation.
Affirmation.
Now, they're actually, officially, it's called now visioning.
Oh, sorry.
And visioning, originally we only had two, and then it was, oh, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, they officially added visioning as part of it. Today, I'm going to add a fourth one.
What are those three again, please?
Pardon? Meditation, visioning, and treatment. So that's one of the things I want to spend a little time on. When we meditate, that's what I call communing with God. Sometimes I say communing with spirit. And when I first got going in Science of Mind, I really was thinking mostly communing in spirit when we meditate. Over my lifetime as a Science of Minder, that's evolved a little bit though, because we have lots of different ways of meditating. And sometimes we do physical things, and sometimes mowing the lawn is a meditative process for me. And we've got, you know, sometimes we do silent meditations, sometimes we do guided meditations, and we just add lots of variations to the way we do meditation. And to me, one of the things that evolves in me, certainly, and probably in most of us, is that moves us from the early thing of just saying we are communing in spirit to really knowing that we are communing in all three of these areas. And when we meditate, we can even get a sense of that physical connection with the universe sometimes, and certainly with mind, as it's called in here. Our mind works in the mind of the universe. And meditation can help us just get a sense of that oneness on all of those levels. that's one of the key practices in that they talk about that builds authority in here, is recognizing that relationship between the circle that represents the individual and the circle that represents the oneness or the whole universe, and in a way how our spiritual practices help us recognize that they're really the same thing. We are part of that bigger circle, because that's what is the root in lesson 6 of what they're talking about as authority for our lives. Now let's talk about that a minute. We meditate. Now to me, that sort of it allows us to feel that oneness of all three of our sections with the universe. But it also really puts us in this communing with spirit part of it. So we're going deeply into spirit up here to see what does it have to allow to emerge into us. But meditation just sort of is just to feel that oneness. To me, the main point of it is to get the idea that these two circles are really one. But then our next principle spiritual practice is visioning. Now to me, that's where we start out envisioning almost always with meditation. And we go deeply into this part of the universe. And then whoever's leading the vision usually starts, as we get into that some deep state, starts asking a variety of questions that help you just, your mind, start listening. And things pop out. So that visioning to me represents that arrow. That's one of the processes we go to use to allow stuff from spirit to pop out consciously in mind. And often we encourage people to write it down. We sit there with a pad of paper and a pen, so that as these things pop up, we just write them down right away so that we can come back to them again. Because when you're in that sort of deep state, you could get to the point where you end it and you wouldn't remember any of it, or all of it, certainly, unless you wrote it down so that you could come back to it. And then when we get through all the questions, then we usually go back into meditation just for a little while to sort of close it out, and then we allow people to start thinking about their notes and maybe even adding to them, because when you do that, more stuff continues to flow. And you write more notes. And then we have the sharing process, where we go around and allow people to share some of the things about their life. And sometimes just the attempt to share by taking a few notes you've written down and trying to express them meaningfully to somebody else helps you express them meaningfully to yourself as well. And a lot of people during the sharing process end up still continuing to write. So that's a beautiful example of how this arrow works. And our first spiritual practice meditation is really focused here and taking us deeply into this, but recognize our oneness on all levels. And then we go to visioning, which sort of represents this arrow. Our third spiritual practice is treatment. What is that? To me, that's the next arrow. Because we hopefully, from the notes and the stuff that we made during visioning and just the things we've gotten in our minds, these represent things that we want to create in our life. Mm-hmm. We want to manifest them. And that's what treatment is all about. We express them in a way that moves them through this part of our mind, so it's down here, and it's going to plant it into, get it ready to be planted into form. And I'll draw in another analogy here to the military thing that I was talking about, where authority is tied to mission. And in a way, what comes out of here is mission for you.
Awesome.
Wow.
And your authority is based on that. So recognizing what that mission is key to having any authority in your life. And then we go on to treatment, which is the way we put it out here, and we express it literally in ways that are interpretable, usually in form. Now, this is where, to me, we get what I consider to be the fourth spiritual practice, which is key in this process. We have a common saying in Science of Mind. First you treat, then what?
Your feet.
Then you move your feet. And to me, moving your feet is the fourth spiritual practice because it's key to complete this arrow and move into form. Moving your feet is form responding to what comes into it here. And that's key to this whole creative process. So coming to an understanding of that, an acceptance of the oneness, and then these roles when you're doing your spiritual practices, meditation, treatment, or visioning and treatment, is key to living your life with this sense of authority. So it's very important. Like I said, Lesson 6 itself doesn't tie in at this point those three spiritual practices, except towards the end, because it does start talking about treatment. And I haven't read further on, but the next lessons coming up are all about treatment. And what they're really talking about is how to get this authority in your treatment. Because treatment is this last step. Okay? That's where you've got to have authority to have it work over here. And that's what they, at the end of Lesson 6, they talk about that. I'm going to close with just one little short story, which I think I've told here before, but it didn't have this emphasis on authority. A number of years ago, I badly injured my left knee. And I went through about a year and a half of it. Pain and it getting worse and worse and worse until I finally went to an orthopedic surgeon. And he x-rayed it and examined it and bent it and all that kind of stuff, and he wasn't seeing anything that really told him what was wrong with it. So he scheduled me for arthroscopic surgery to go in with probes and look at everything on the inside to find out what's going on in that knee. Some of you may remember the story. I remember the surgery was scheduled for a Thursday. The Sunday before that, I was in the service at the Celebration Center. And we had a woman there who had been coming for some time. I can't remember her name, but I had gotten to know her a little bit, and not well, because she lived about 25 miles out west of Fairfax. I can't remember the name of the town. And she had a partner, and she was gay. But she was a professional, hands-on healer.
Kathy Jo Shea.
Pardon?
Kathy Jo Shea.
I think that might be right, yes. Wow. You're good, I don't do names. So when I was walking out of the service at the end of it, I was limping badly. And she came up behind me and tapped me and said, "Why are you limping?" So I told her what the problem was and that I was scheduled for surgery, and you know, and we didn't know what it was. And this is where the authority comes in, because I remember this almost to the point where it could put me in tears. She looked at me and said, "Sit down," and pointed at a chair with huge authority. I mean, there was no question in my mind about sitting down now. And then she looked at me and she said, "Now, you are a practitioner." This, I'm fairly new, and I've been a practitioner maybe about a year. And she said, "Now, you do what you do to work on problems like that," very authoritatively. And then she said, "And I'll do what I do." And she got down on her knees, put her hands on my knee, closed her eyes, and I closed my eyes and just started doing a treatment, which lasted, I don't know, 5 minutes, maybe a little more. And then I started ending the treatment, and I felt her hands come off of my knee. And I opened my eyes and looked at her, and she just looked up at me, done, and left the building. The tone of voice and the way she said that was one of the biggest examples I've ever had in my life, outside of the military, of someone speaking to me with authority. It was absolutely amazing. At dinner time that night, next time I thought about it, I suddenly realized and told Diane, I said, my God, I haven't had any pain in that knee all afternoon. The next morning, I still didn't. By Tuesday night, I got all the way to Tuesday night. I had no more pain in that. And actually, it was Tuesday afternoon. I called the orthopedic surgeon, told him I wanted to cancel the surgery on Thursday. He said, why? And I sort of told him, I said, well, I had this strange experience yesterday, but the pain has gone away completely, and I think it's maybe healed, and I don't want to do the surgery. And he said, all right, we'll cancel the surgery, but you have to come at the same time into my office and tell me what went on. So I did. And I explained to him what happened. He did not seem incredulous or anything. He just nodded. So I told him that, and that pain never came back again. I never had a problem again with that left knee, with that pain. Over the years, I got arthritis in it, and now I've got an artificial left knee. But it never came back. That problem was completely solved, and I relate so much of the effect of it to the authority that that woman had when she dealt with me. And that's the kind of thing that we've got to do when we pray for ourselves. We've got to have that kind of authority and trust in this oneness that we have with the universe. So, that's it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
And I have no idea what we do next, so I'll let you.
We thank you for doing a magnificent job. What a great teacher you are.
Absolutely.